You think you know me, you know anything you think you know me.
Welcome to the first edition of the Diamond Podcast exclusively on www.gerweck.net, gerweck.net, and we had a chance to talk to Caitlin Diamond right before her big tour back on April the 16th. You can find the interview at gerweck.net. Go to gerweck.net, search the audio section at the bottom of the page, and you can find our archives, previous podcast interviews. So definitely check that out, and I'd like to welcome back today Caitlin Diamond. How are you doing today, Caitlin?
Great. Even better now that I found out there's going to be a Diamond podcast. Very exciting.
Exclusively at gerweck.net.
That's right.
Well, let's catch up with you since we talked to you last back in April. It's been over a month since we've talked to you, about 5 weeks.
Sure.
I know we were talking before, you were looking forward to this big tour. You got a chance to work with the likes of Sarah Stock, Sarita in TNA, and Serena Deeb.
Yes.
So kind of update us on how the tour went and maybe like a highlight or favorite match during the tour.
Oh, gosh, that's so hard. I mean, the tour was really just fantastic from beginning to end. For me, I've never had so much fun on a tour in my life. It was just a really great crew. Everyone was super cool. You know, usually there's one person that you think is kind of a douchebag or someone you don't really like, but this time we really lucked out with this crew. I worked 5 nights in a row. I worked Bambi Hall, and that was a lot of fun working with her. You know, she's a good kid. I worked Sarah 1 night, and I worked Serena 2 nights. I feel like my match with Sarah was probably technically the best match that I've ever had in my life. My matches with Serena were just silly and fun and just, we were just trying to go a different angle. You know, we weren't trying to have a technical masterpiece or anything like that, but just crowd interaction and stuff like that. So to pick a favorite, it really depends on what you like. I don't really have a favorite style of wrestling. I don't like technical above silly or vice versa. So I guess my matches with Sarah and Serena would be a tie, just because they were both so different, it's hard to compare them.
And I saw a picture. How did you end up donning the mask once again for your matches?
Yeah, that's what the promoter wanted, was just something different. So I was the sole woman under a mask on that tour.
How are, I haven't had a chance to talk to Serena in a while, and I think we did a print interview with Sarah Stock years ago. How are they doing? Kind of catch us up. I know Sarah is basically working full-time in Mexico, and how is Serena doing?
They're both awesome, you know, both really humble, cool, positive people, you know, no superstar attitudes or anything like that. And yeah, Sarah's working full-time in Mexico, you know, she's been to Japan. Serena, since leaving WWE, she lives in L.A. now. She's done some tours of Japan as well. You know, she's still doing the big name indies in the United States. They're both doing really good, you know, mentally and physically. So it was a pleasure to have them with us.
Serena is going to work this weekend for Shine. I think I saw her mention that as well. So
yes,
as you said, she's working some of the bigger indies out there. And, of course, Shine is on an internet pay-per-view. So if you want to check that out, you can go to Shine Wrestling and check the card out for this weekend. I think it's Friday night. They do their pay-per-views on Friday night. So, and
yeah, I highly
Sarah
recommend anybody check that out. I mean, Serena's work is top-notch. Also, my good friend Leah Von Dutch will be there as well.
Cool. And I know it's great to have these alternatives, because I know there's a lot of frustrated wrestling fans right now with WWE, TNA, and like in my case, I don't have access to Ring of Honor. So you know, if you're tired of WWE, TNA, there's alternatives out there. Independent wrestling, Shine Wrestling, Ring of Honor is, they just had a pay-per-view on internet pay-per-view. So there are those alternatives out there, so fans can check those out. So definitely would encourage that. I think Bambi is a wrestler that probably not too many people know about, and I did see that she actually beat Sarah Stock for one of the championships on your tour.
Yes, she did.
What can you tell us about her? Kind of just give a little background on her.
She's from Vancouver, British Columbia, so she lives on the west coast of Canada. And sadly, there's not too many independent promotions in her area, so she doesn't get to work as often as she should. And there's not that much of a selection of women out there for her to work with. You know, Nicole Matthews is there, and Casey Spinelli, and a few other girls, but compared to, like, Ontario, she doesn't get, you know, a variety of opponents that she really needs to evolve. I mean, she's great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not bashing her at all. You know, she's been working for 4 years now, and I was blown away by how good she is for her level of experience. She's a really good opponent, and, you know, she's a good listener, too. So I would put her over to anybody that would listen. And anyone that wants to take a chance on her is making a good decision.
Talk about the crowd, some of the fan reaction during the tour.
You know, we had a lot of different atmospheres. We did an iPay-per-view, or we filmed for an iPay-per-view. It wasn't live or anything like that. And, you know, that was a really solid house. We also did a live bar show. So that was just a lot of, like, drunk people yelling, and it was like in Canada legal drinking age is 19, so it was like a 19 plus only show, so we kind of got to let loose and swear and do, you know, things that are a little more adult oriented on that show, so that was fun. I don't get to do those too often. The majority of the shows were family friendly, you know, at hockey rinks and stuff like that. But there was a few times where we switched it up, and it was really fun.
Now, the iPay-per-view that you did, or you pre-taped, any details on when that might actually air or be available?
I wish I could tell you. I don't know, to be honest with you. I think High Spots is going to be involved, so you can check their website. But if not, I mean, I'll promote the hell out of it on my social media when it does air, and I'll let you know for sure.
Sounds good. Who did you work on that show?
I worked Bambi on that show.
Okay.
And
sounds good.
What we did was to crown the first champion, it was like three singles, so the winners of those singles went on in a triple threat to crown the first champion.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you got back from your tour, and then you had a weekend off, so it probably feels good to, I know you miss it, you almost work every weekend, but it's probably good to get home and recharge your batteries a little bit as well.
Well, that's what people are saying, but I mean, with getting home on a Monday, I definitely needed a few days. I mean, you have no idea, like, I went, like, about, in 72 hours, I slept about 7 hours.
Wow.
Including on the trip back. So I definitely needed a few days, but, you know, I was really depressed when I got home. I was just like, man, I just went from wrestling every single night for 2 weeks, and now I've got 2 weeks until I'm wrestling again. It was just, like, overwhelming. I think it's because I was so sleep-deprived, but when I got home, I was really bummed out. I was just like, oh, my God, it's over, because I wish that tour was my life. I could have done it every night. Honestly, my body held up really well, and I felt like, you know, as long as we had one day off every 10 days or so, I'd be good.
How hard is it to, you know, when you're on the road like that? I would assume on this tour, did you mostly travel by car, or did you fly?
No, we were vehicling it all the way.
Okay. So you racked up a few miles.
Yeah. I mean, so on hard. This tour, it wasn't as bad as some of the other ones I've done. All of these ones, like, the longest drive we had to do to get from one town to another was, like, 3.5 hours.
So I'm assuming you found a few new eateries to crash at.
Yeah. Well, there was the whole everyone wanted to do seafood thing because we're on the East Coast. I'm not a huge seafood person, but I do like me some fish and chips and a few little things. What else? There's something that's famous to the Nova Scotia area, and they're called Donairs. If you've ever watched Trailer Park Boys, you'll hear them talk about the King of Donairs, the King of Donairs. Well, these things you can only get in Nova Scotia. So on our last night, because we know these are, like, really bad for you, on our last night when we didn't have to work anymore, all of us were like, okay, let's do this. We went to a really famous Donair place, and I took a picture of it. I'll post it online eventually. This thing was huge. We ordered a small. And, you know, they wrap it up in tinfoil, and then they put it in, like a little bag, like as if to go, right? So I'm like, oh, okay, thank you very much. I pay for it. And I go to pick it up with one hand, and it's so heavy. Like, my wrist buckles when I go to lift it up. I'm like, oh, I underestimated how heavy this is going to be. The thing was massive, okay? And I couldn't even finish it. It's hard to describe what it's like. It's like, if you know what a gyro is, or a gyro, or whatever they're called.
Right, yep.
It's like that kind of beef in a pita, and it's the sauce. It's called Donair sauce, what really makes it. It's like a sweet Alfredo type of sauce. It's really hard to describe unless you've tried it, but if anyone's ever in Nova Scotia, please try it. It's worth it.
So did you gain a few pounds, or were you able to exercise along the way?
Oh, God. With wrestling every night, you'd think I'd be fine, but I totally gained weight on this tour. The first few days, everyone was really good, and, you know, we were all eating healthy, and, yeah, we're gonna stick to our diets, and then I don't know what happened. One day, we all just gave up simultaneously at the same time. We're all just like, we want chocolate and candy and everything terrible, and we were bad. So, I mean, it's good that I didn't have any shows the weekend after I got back, because I looked and felt like crap. So at least I've had 2 weeks to work it off.
Yeah, I was going to, after we did the initial interview, I had some questions I was going to ask you, and I thought now would be a good time to kind of do like kind of part two of our interview that we did. And
sure.
I was wondering if you have any particular pre-match rituals and any post-match rituals you do, you know, after the match.
I'm really, and if you ever watch my work, this will really bug you about me. Every time I take a bump or do anything where I'm moving around, I'm always adjusting, like my knee pads or my pants or my shorts. Everything. I'm always, like, just touching my gear. So before I go out, I know I'm like this in the ring, so I'm always just moving my stuff around, and it drives me nuts that I even do it, but I can't help it. That's not really a ritual, but it's just a habit that I have. You know, I like to squat before my matches and, you know, jog on the spot and just warm myself up a little bit. I don't really have anything that I ritualistically have to do or else I can't perform or anything that dramatic. But yeah, I just like to warm up and adjust my gear about 1,000 times before I go out in the ring and do it 1,000 more times.
Is there anything like in terms of eating a meal? Is there something like day of a match or, you know, hours before a match you may want to nibble on before a match or some protein or anything like that?
I try not to eat too close to match time. Like I usually won't eat within like 4 hours of having to wrestle, just because it does make a difference. Like if you do it, I've done it before, and you just feel bloated and heavy, and you don't feel your best, and you feel you don't look your best. So, I mean, I'll eat a big meal in the morning if I know I've got an afternoon show or something like that, or I'll have a small meal in the morning and a small meal in the afternoon if I know I have an evening show. But after the show, that's when I get in trouble. Then I feel like I deserve a good big meal, right? But when you work, you know, 14 shows in 15 days, you don't deserve a big meal every night.
True. Any accidents in the ring?
No. actually had my first wardrobe malfunction on this tour.
Oh, really?
First night. And I don't even really know why. We were doing a six-woman tag, and Sarah was bumping me around, and I didn't notice. It wasn't, like, dramatic or anything, but I took a bump, and I looked down, and I noticed, like, my shirt had, like, rode up, and you couldn't see anything. You could see my bra and, like, the fact that I was wearing a bra. You couldn't see, like, nip or anything like that, but I was just like, oh, I'm kind of half hanging out here. So I had to, she wanted me to, like, bump and feed and bump and feed, and I was like, no, I got to stay on the ground and fix this. And she saw it, and she just left me alone.
No nip slip on this one.
No, thank God.
Now, I probably should ask you this when you were talking about the tour. Have you ever been, like, majorly ribbed, or did you ever really get anybody good on a rib?
Oh, gosh. The worst that's really happened to me was, now this happened to me when I was working the death tours when I was a lot younger, but, you know, we'd go out partying and drinking, and I'd be, like, really hungover the next day, and what they'd do is they'd call my room really, really early, like, way earlier than we had to leave, and be like, oh my God, we gotta leave, go, 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 you got 5 minutes. And I'd pack all my stuff up, rush downstairs, and they're just down there laughing. I'm like, oh, you guys, I could have slept for another hour, you know, things like that. I've been pretty lucky. No one's ever done anything, like, really, really mean to me.
As far as promoters, you know, independent wrestlers, they're going to experience really good promoters. They're going to experience not-so-good promoters. Can you maybe name a couple of the best promoters, and then have you ever really been stiffed, like, as far as I was booked for a show, I worked a show, and I didn't get paid for it?
I've worked shows that I haven't gotten paid for sure, especially when I first started wrestling. There's people that owe me money to this day, and I'll never forget who they are and how much they owe me, even though they're never going to pay me. I'll still remind them about it if I ever see their face again. But, you know, as time goes on, you just kind of learn who the crooks are, and you learn to avoid them. And, you know, I don't really necessarily want to single anybody out as a good promoter, because then everyone who I don't name is going to be like, well, I'm not a good promoter. So, I mean, everybody that I work for, I do consider a good promoter, otherwise I wouldn't work for them.
That kind of puts you on the spot on both ends. You know, you want to not single anybody out, but then on the flip side, too, I mean, there's probably a couple of, you know, promoters that are very shady, and it's amazing to me, some of those real shady promoters are around as long as they are, because you'd think, you know, once they get that bad reputation of a few guys didn't get paid or a few girls didn't get paid, that who'd want to work for them anymore, really?
Well, it's just new wrestlers that don't know any better, and it's
right.
It's also a sad state the business is in, that wrestlers are just marks to get on shows, and they don't care, and they're like, oh, well, I'll take my chances because I want to work, and, you know, that's fucking pathetic, really, but it is what it is. I mean, I almost ended up working those hardcore road trip shows that everyone got screwed out of money for. I was supposed to work those on May 31st and June 1st, but the thing is, I had no idea this guy was a shyster, because I guess, you know, everyone he screwed over is people I'm not friends with, so I never got the memo. But, you know, I was on that tour, and word broke out that this guy screwed everyone out a lot of money and stuff. So I was like, oh, okay. Well, good that it didn't happen to me, but at the same time, you know, I feel bad for everyone that it did happen to.
You ever thought about, I know, probably not like this minute, but you ever thought about maybe somewhere down the line I could run my own show, promote my own show?
Me?
Yeah.
Or you?
No, not me.
I never want to
run
a show.
Okay.
I know so many people that have run shows. Like, my trainer ran shows for a long time, and it's hard work. And it's really hard to make money.
Right.
My ex-boyfriend used to tell me all the time that he wanted to run a show, and his promotion would be different, and here's why. And every time he brought it up, I just, like, I mocked him right to his face. I was just like, you don't even know what you're talking about, man. Running a show is so hard. Not just any clown can do it. Well, I mean, any clown can do it, but you're not going to make any money, so fact is, you're still
right.
a clown.
if you're ready to lose your shirt, you could probably run a show.
Yeah, anybody could, but it's just
yeah.
like, you know, keep putting a product out there where you're continually making money and the fans keep coming back and the workers want to keep coming back. That's hard work. I've assisted people enough and, you know, also just seen people on the point of, like, breakdowns just because of how much stress it is and how hard it is. Like, legitimate mental breakdowns. Like, all the stress that's put on you. So I don't want any part of that.
You know, sometimes, you know, as a journalist on GirlWick.net, we receive all kinds of press releases for indie shows. And sometimes I see these press releases and I see, you know, three or four notable names and I'm thinking, okay, I have a rough idea, you know, what some of the higher end guys are getting and what they usually request.
Mm-hmm.
You know, besides, usually it's a flat fee and then sometimes it's transportation. You have to fly them in.
Oh,
sometimes
yeah.
Sometimes you have to put them up in a hotel room for the night. So I'm thinking, okay, they got this name and they got this name and they got this name on a card. And I'm thinking, now what do they have to do to get their money out of this investment? How many tickets do they have to sell? Are they going to tape this show and try to sell it on the internet or through DVDs? Are they going to try to put on an internet pay-per-view, which is a kind of a growing market now? You see more and more indie groups, you know, run an internet pay-per-view, and I'm thinking, wow. I don't know if people really realize. I mean, you have to book the venue. You know, you have to work out an arrangement. Then you have to sell the tickets, and you have to get insurance. And there's a lot of things that go into it, and I see some of these releases, and I think, man, they're going to have to sell a lot of tickets to even break even.
Oh, God,
and,
yeah. It makes me
and a lot of times they don't. Yeah.
It's a really uphill battle from the start. And I can't even believe the amount of people that run shows, like, just in Ontario alone. And your average crowd is, like, I don't know, 100 people, maybe. And I'm just thinking, man, either A, how many people are you screwing over? Or B, you're losing your shirt.
Right.
You know, there's only two ways to look at it. So it's just mind-boggling.
Well, I mean, another thing would be advertising. I mean, you once you book your venue and you book your talent, it's like, okay, how do I promote my show now? I mean, this is when you're the promoters. How do you get the word out about, hey, I got this show on this night, come see our show? And,
yeah.
You know, internet's great, but not everybody is going to be glued into wherever your particular show is. I mean, if you have a particular website for a promotion, not everybody visits it. So how do they get the word out about their shows? And
yeah, you really got a poster and flyer.
Right.
And really get out there, and it's so much harder than a lot of people know.
I think on the local shows, I think a lot of it's just word of mouth, right? Like so-and-so says, hey, so-and-so's running a show Friday night. They run pretty good shows. Maybe you want to check that out. You get kind of
yeah.
a reputation, you know?
Yeah.
Or you get the reputation of, well, I went to one of his shows and it wasn't particularly very good, and next time he comes around, I'd probably skip it. So.
Yeah, exactly.
If you were put in a position where you could kind of book yourself, say you were going to be on a television show, what kind of character do you see yourself portraying? Or do you kind of want to continue on with what you're currently doing? Or if you were kind of given kind of the creative reins to really sell yourself to a new audience, kind of how would you go about booking yourself?
I think I'm a really interesting person. I'm not going to lie. I think if I was simply myself, that would be the best way to market me. I auditioned for Big Brother Canada, and I did make it to, like, top 20 Ontario casting. I didn't end up making the show, which I think is a big mistake on their part.
Absolutely.
But, you know, a reality show would be really good for me, I think. Because, you know, I know how to get along in groups of people, and, you know, I can have my diary room confessions where I actually cut everyone up that I don't actually like and pretend to be nice to their faces, that kind of thing. I'm good at playing games like that. So, I mean, Survivor I think would be a little too much for me, but Big Brother, honestly, I've been a huge fan of that show since I was a kid, and I think I'd be a really good player, so I'm going to continue to audition for that next year.
Well, I definitely agree that you're an interesting subject. That's why we're doing this podcast, because, you know, I had a great time talking to you the first time around, and I thought this is a great subject, and we could, you know, definitely do something with her. And
yeah,
and
it's funny.
So here we are today.
There was a guy on the tour that just thought I was completely hilarious, and his name was Jason Rumble, and he said I should have my own sitcom, and that he was going to write me a pilot. Like, I don't think he's actually serious that he's going to write me a pilot, but he was dead serious about the fact that he thought I should have my own, like, Jerry Seinfeld-like sitcom, where it's just me in, like, everyday situations and just my reactions and stuff like that. He was 100% on board for that. So that's another angle that we could take with it.
Cool. I'd like to see that myself.
If someone would write it, I mean, I would do it. I'm just, I'm not too good with ideas, so I'd run out eventually, and I don't know how good it would be.
We're seeing so many wrestlers, you know, go into acting, so maybe it's kind of like a natural progression, you know, could be a natural progression for you as well.
I was always into acting, too. Like, drama was always my favorite subject in school, and it just came super naturally to me. So I progressed really from drama into wrestling. I don't see why I couldn't go back.
Absolutely. Definitely keep the door open. You never know.
Yeah.
You talk about some of the famous wrestling personalities you met. I saw pictures. You had a picture of Jake the Snake, of course, the newest member of the Hall of Fame, and I saw a picture of Gangrel that you ran into. Can you talk about just some of the other notable names you've come across on your tours?
Oh, geez. So I guess Sarah and Serena, we've covered those guys. Who else was there that night? I think Sylvain Grenier was there that night with Jake the Snake and those guys.
I haven't heard that name in a long time. What's he up to nowadays? Is he still wrestling?
Yeah, I guess he's still wrestling.
Okay.
He's out in Quebec. I don't know. I mean, I run into names on a fairly regular basis, but it's not like something I go out of my way to remember that, like, ooh, I met so-and-so, because after you meet a few people with, like, name value, when you're first starting out in wrestling and you're young, you think it's, like, really cool. I met Bobby Roode today. And then, like, after a bit of time goes by, you're like, it's just Bobby Roode. Who cares? So, I mean, I've met lots of people. I can't remember to tell you who they were, but I have.
Well, let me ask you this way. Is there anybody that you'd really like to run into, you know, kind of a legendary figure of just, you know, somebody you're really a fan of right now and say, wow, if I ran into him, that'd be pretty cool.
I'd love to run into Jericho again.
Jericho.
Actually, that's someone I'll name drop. Is his band played a festival in my city that I live in, and I went to the concert, and I rocked out because I love his band, and I love him. And they were doing, like a VIP after-party thing at a club. Now, I just went to the club with my friends after, and, like, I was like, ooh, I'm just going to stalk around and stare at him. So I tried to, like, get into their little VIP area, and the security was like, no, you're not getting back there. And I was like, okay. But the guitar player, Rich Ward, who is actually Daphne's ex-husband, he recognized me from the concert because he said, even though I was really far back, he's like, you were the only person there that, like, knew all the lyrics to all of our songs because, I mean, it was a festival. They had, like, 3 Days Grace and Finger Eleven and a lot of really good, well-known bands there that most people were there to see the names. You know, I was there to see Fozzy, so, and, like, I know their stuff, right? So he was, like, I guess impressed that I knew all the lyrics to all of their songs, so he invited me to hang out with them for the night. And, you know, I got to talk with Jericho for a good long while and drink with them and party with them for the whole night. And I kind of ditched my friends. I felt bad, but I was like, see you later, guys.
Catch you later.
Yeah, that's something I'll never forget. It was awesome. I'd love to run into Jericho again just because he's always been my favorite. He's always got his hand in so many bags. He's just, like, such a good personality and character.
He's a very busy guy, you know, with wrestling and music, and now he's doing a podcast as well on his end. So he's very involved. So that's for sure.
He's a media guru, I think. He's all over the place. So I have nothing but respect for that guy.
I was one of the questions I was meant to ask you in that first interview. We were talking, about your career, and I just wondered, at this point, have you ever really put out feelers to either WWE or TNA?
Not really. Every so often they'll have if you want us to look at you, fill out this form type of thing.
Right.
And, I've filled that out a few times, but I'm sure tens of thousands of people have done that. So I don't really consider that putting a feeler out. For me to confidently put a feeler out, I have to feel like I know somebody that actually knows somebody, and I'm not really in that position right now. I'm sure with the contacts that I've made, even just from this tour, when I get back to Mexico, I want to put out feelers to CMLL because that's where Sarah works. And now I know somebody that knows somebody. And the same with AAA. I know Jennifer Blake. And now that I know some bare-bone basics for Lucha Libre, I can put out feelers there too. So I just have to be confident in my contact and who I'm getting to put the feeler out for me, really.
Is it kind of discouraging? Because I just saw WWE, they really seem to like models. Find girls through modeling agencies. I mean, we've seen I remember Kelly was a model, and then Alicia Fox came from modeling. And is it kind of discouraging when you hear about, WWE just hired a new girl that's not an independent wrestler, it's not somebody who's paid their dues in the business, it's just some girl they saw a picture of and they thought was really pretty and they'll want to train her?
Of course, it's super discouraging. That's another reason I'm not sure. Like, I know I want to work for them, but I really want to be confident when I put that feeler out there because, if that's what they're hiring right now, I mean, I know they're kind of getting a little bit closer back to where they used to be with indie wrestlers now, but, I'm the exact opposite of a model. I mean, some people sure might say, you're pretty and you have your own vibe that way, but I do not know how to act, be like that. I don't think any amount of training would work on me. It's just not the kind of person I am. So they'd have to want a wrestler if they looked at me, and I don't feel like their market is really in that spot right now. So I don't want to waste their time, and I don't want to waste my own time. I think I'll know when the timing's right. I'm sure it will be eventually, and I can confidently feel good about contacting them in hopes that I get a job.
Yeah, I'm always amazed. I'll read that, WWE signed a new girl, and I'm thinking it's probably somebody I'm familiar with. It's either I've talked to or somebody on the independent circuit, and it's a name I've never heard of, and then you realize it's somebody's not even in the business at all. And it's just...
And I'm not saying there's not room for that to an extent, but when it's 50 or 75% of your roster, that's just not good. Can't lie about that. There's always going to be a place. I mean, the Diva Search is something that, I really didn't appreciate, especially when I was a lot younger when that happened. But, there was good that came out of that. And there are people like Maria Kanellis, who's really smart and a really good valet, and I don't know how her work has progressed, if she's wrestling often or not, but she's a good personality and she deserves to be on TV. She's a great looking girl. There are spots that are out there for models for sure. It just can't be all of them, and it can't be the majority of them or even half of them. They've got to take the wrestling seriously.
When the problem is you sign all these models, and then when they're on the main roster, you're not getting very good matches because they're very green. They've only been, wrestling for a short time. They went through the training camp at, I guess, would be Orlando now, the Performance Center, and suddenly, went through NXT, and suddenly you're on television. So
and that's WWE's fault for expecting too much from them. These girls have no
sure.
idea what the business is even about. And, you know, you put them in NXT for a year and think they're going to have great matches. When you throw them out there on Raw, no, they're going to sink. It's not the girls' fault for taking the money and taking worldwide TV exposure. I don't blame them at all. It's like WWE, I don't know what they expect everyone to be Trish Stratus. And
right.
Trish Stratus wasn't made overnight.
No.
You know?
No. Yeah, they've tried to recreate Trish a lot of times, and it just doesn't quite work. I mean, you have to find a special person to be a Trish Stratus.
Exactly.
And they haven't found one really since.
No, they have not.
So, you know, that's a tough one. Those are tough boots to fill there. So.
Absolutely.
Now, I know you were very young when this happened, but what is your opinion of the Montreal Screwjob?
My opinion.
Because everybody's got an opinion on it. So, and I know you were young at that time, but
maybe
a different perspective. You're Canadian, so.
yeah, I am.
Work, shoot. What do you think happened that night?
Oh, it was shoot. I believe people that say it's a work that kind of annoys me. It was definitely a shoot. Why would they wait like, I don't know, 12 years or 18 years or whatever it was just to capitalize on it? I don't think that makes any sense. It was a shoot. I don't like the way it went down. I can see both sides of the argument. That's just, it's Vince's company, and he runs the biggest company in the world. Who am I to say, you know, you made a really bad decision, Vince, but I don't know. That's really disrespectful what they did to Bret Hart. I probably wouldn't still be crying about it like 10 years later like he was. I don't think he overreacted at the time, but I just think like the fact that he held on to it for so long and didn't let it go, that was a bit ridiculous. Yeah, I don't really know what else to say about that.
Yeah, I was just curious to pick your brain on that one, because we just did a podcast with Joe Dombrowski, who did the Montreal Theory, which is a DVD where he just talked to different people, and there were some that are convinced it was a work, and there's some people that are convinced it's a shoot, and we were kind of debating what would be the reasons for this, you know, being a work, and the reasons it would be a shoot, and it got to me thinking. I always never thought it was a work, you know, I always thought it was a shoot, but then it was the one thing you brought up that kind of picked my brain a little bit is why was Bret so defiant on not losing the championship in Canada? And it's like, well, he's Canadian, but then again, it's John Cena saying he doesn't want to lose his championship in Massachusetts. I mean,
it's a word.
They're not even really comparable. And so it's,
oh.
Yeah, I guess that, it kind of makes some sense. Yeah. Why was Bret so defiant on that? And
I have no idea. I mean, I don't get what his whole thing was with that. I just guess he felt like they shat on him for a long time, and he wasn't happy with the way he was presented, and, you know, it was his last time in Canada, and it was his last day with the company, and he didn't want to look like crap anymore, but that's not really up to him. I mean, I guess it was, because it was supposedly he had creative control in his contract, so I guess it was kind of up to him, or he was supposed to have some sort of creative freedom in his contract, but I don't know. That was him kind of being a bit of a baby.
Right.
As far as that being the reason it was a work, I think Bret's legitimately like that. If you've watched Beyond the Mat, I don't think he could work that good. To be honest with you, personality-wise, I think that's genuinely him. And did I say Beyond the Mat? I meant whatever that DVD was called that was like the documentary on the screen.
Oh, The Wrestling with Shadows.
Wrestling with Shadows, yeah. That's
right.
What I meant.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. Yeah, if you ever watch that, you can see his personality shows right through. And if it was a work, like, why would they... I know they've exposed the business, but why would they expose the business to that degree just to work us?
Well, that whole documentary was one of the subjects that was brought up to say, Wasn't it just interesting that they just happened to be filming Brett at this particular moment of the most, like the highlight of his career in terms of the controversy to make all this money, to be pushed away? And I mean, obviously Vince had to know he was being taped, and yet he went along with it. And so it just kind of makes you go, you know, if Vince would have known what happened to Brett going to WCW, then you could say, yeah, you know, he planned it that way. But to me, he was taking a real big risk by letting Brett go. I mean, Brett could have went to WCW and really meant something at WCW. I mean, he was he never really lost the championship. They could have built him up as the guy who never lost the world championship.
Yeah, exactly.
But at that time, you know, WCW had so many politics, and Eric Bischoff had really lost power there, and the power brokers to be, the Hulk Hogan's, the Kevin Nash's, definitely weren't going to let Brett be a major star over them. So, you know, Brett goes there and he's the U.S. champion. I mean, you know, so if Vince could have had a fortune, if he would have known that Brett would have kind of fluttered in WCW, he'd say, "Yeah, go ahead, Brett, go to WCW. What do I care?" But I just think, man, he took such a risk to let one of your top stars go to the competition at a time when the competition was kicking your butt. So,
yeah, definitely.
What a risk to take there. So,
yeah.
Yeah. When you were down in Mexico, did you see any of the bullfights?
No.
No.
Do they even have those in Mexico City?
I don't know about Mexico City, but they've got to be. It seems like they have bullfights everywhere down in Mexico.
But Mexico City is like a really, really highly populated, dense city, concrete jungle. So I don't know where the hell they would have bullfights. I didn't see any or like hear of any being advertised or anything like that. That would have been really cool to see, though.
Yeah.
If I do find any, I will go for sure.
Maybe the next time you're down there, you say, "Hey, where's the bullfight?"
Yeah. I'll do some snooping around.
I know where the taco stands are. Now, where's the bullfights?
There's a taco stand on every corner.
Earlier in your growing up, did you ever really get into a real shoot fight?
All the time.
And did you win or did you lose?
It depends which one you're asking. I got into a big scuffle in high school that I definitely won, and then everyone in the school said I lost, and it made me really angry. I got jumped by this girl, and I was wearing braces at the time, so she got like one good shot in on me, and because I was wearing braces, my lips were bleeding.
Ooh.
Punch, but like right after that, I like took her ass down, you know, mounted her, punched the crap out of her, put her in a submission. She couldn't get out of it. Then eventually it ended with the principal ripping me off of her. But because my lip was bleeding, everyone in school was like, "You lost the fight. You lost the fight." I'm like, whatever. That's crap. I wasn't particularly popular in high school either, so I'm sure that's also why I lost the fight.
Sure.
I got into a really big fight few years back with my friend Jody DeMilo. It was me, her, and one other girl. We were walking home from a bar, and we got into a fight with like about 7 or 8 people, and only 2 of them were girls. And I mean, we did okay for a little bit, but like eventually, they just beat the crap out of us. I went down swinging, though. I will fight you until I cannot move. I don't care what the odds are. I don't care how badly I'm losing. I will fight you with everything I have. And that's exactly what happened. Someone had to call the police because it just was never going to end, even though we were getting our asses handed to us. Someone had to call the police, and the big gang of people ran away from us.
You've been a bully for a while then, right?
Bully? What do you call 8-on-3? Do you call that me being a bully?
Who started it?
They definitely started it. I mean, they walked over to us, and they thought we were calling them names, which we weren't. And then, I mean, actually, maybe you could argue that we started it, but there was a guy, and he got in my friend Jody's face, and it said, I ought to slap you in the face, or something. He said something very disrespectful to her, and, you know, she's one of my best friends, and that just, like, fired me up. I was like, who the hell do you think you are, man? Why don't you try and slap her in the face and see what happens? And then it was just, like, on from there. I didn't actually expect him to try anything, but, it just, them being so disrespectful, I won't stand for someone talking to my friend like that, even if I regret it later.
I guess it was strength in numbers that night, huh? 8-on-3, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, it started off with just the two girls at first getting on me, and, like, even just me alone, I handled them fine because they don't know who they're dealing with, first of all. They have no real fighting experience. And I've been in martial arts since the time I was 3 years old. So, I mean, I know what I'm doing. And, yeah, I mean, I handled them on my own perfectly fine. And that's when their, like, boyfriends and their other friends realized, oh, man, they're getting crap kicked out of them. We should jump in and beat on women. And that's when it went downhill for us.
Let's learn a little about you outside the ring. What are some of your favorite things to do, some of your hobbies?
I like soccer. You know, I played last year in a co-ed league. I haven't played this year. I probably won't. You know, it's just too much of a risk to my health. Because soccer is extremely hard, believe it or not. But I love watching soccer. I work out. I tan. You know, pretty much your typical wrestler things. And, you know, just socializing with the friends and family. I like TV, pretty normal in that sense. But I'm kind of boring outside of wrestling. Wrestling's pretty much consumed my life at this point.
You've been in it for so long now, so.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Literally almost half my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I never thought of it that way. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was so weird. On the way back from the tour, it was just quiet in the car, and I was thinking, oh, yeah, it's May now. And I just went, whoa, out loud, and everyone's like, you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I just realized, like, with April passing, I've been bumping for 10 years. If you count, like,
wow.
Training, right? Like, 10 years of bumps I've taken. It's crazy to me.
And you're still in great shape.
Apparently.
Now you mentioned TV. What are some of your favorite TV shows?
Oh, God. I like a lot of TV shows. Right now, Arrow is one of my favorites. Suits is really good. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's great. I was a huge fan of Gossip Girl. That's over now. Dexter was another really good one that I liked. So many. My laptop is just, like, stocked with TV shows. So when I went to Mexico, like, just so I can have something in English to watch and appreciate while I'm there. I like Archer. It's a really funny cartoon. I like Hannibal.
Are you like a Netflix subscriber then? You watch all those shows that are on there?
I don't subscribe just because I can find anything that's on Netflix on the internet anyways for free.
I see. Right.
So I know Netflix is really cheap, but I'm cheaper.
You have to be when you're an independent wrestler, right?
That's right. You got to cut corners anywhere you can.
How about as far as movies? You got like a favorite movie, a couple of favorite movies?
I like thrillers. I like horror movies.
Mm.
And movies that make you think and that are psychological. So I really enjoyed the Saw series. I know it was kind of overdone towards the end with there being so many of them made, but especially like the first two or three were like really, really well thought out good movies. And I don't really have favorites other than those, but that's the genre that I prefer. I like all kinds of movies, except for, like, I try to steer clear of, like, romantic comedies because they're just so cheesy and unrealistic, and I just hate chick flicks.
How about as far as music? What's, like, your favorite What's your favorite genre of music?
Again, I'm pretty open when it comes to that. I like everything except for country. And some country I don't mind, but it's like few and far between that I could say I actually like country music, you know? But I love rock and roll, alternative, heavy metal, emo, screamo stuff. And, you know, I also like hardcore, gangster, hip-hop, rap, R&B, all that kind of stuff.
So what do you usually work out to? Is there like a favorite kind of music to when you're exercising or working out?
I have a shuffle, you know. I just
okay.
put it on shuffle, and whatever I feel like listening to, I'll shuffle through and find something. I live for shuffle because I'm a really random person. I never just say, I want to listen to this album right now. Like, that's I'm not that person at all. I have a lot of like wrestlers' themes on my iPod that I'll like. Sometimes they get me really pumped up when I'm working out. Like, you know, you hear like Edge's old song or something. You know, that'll.
You think you know me?
Yeah, or like Jericho's
yeah.
theme, or you know, my classics. I get into that when I'm like on the treadmill and stuff. But I still don't go out of my way to search for those. They have to come up in shuffle, otherwise I won't listen to them.
I think we're like that way. There's a lot of songs on my iPod, and I like to shuffle too, just to give me a little variety. I think that's what it comes down to. Is you know, some days you're in a mood for this, and some days you're in the mood for that. So
I just can't make decisions ever about anything. I'm a Libra, and apparently that's like a common characteristic of a Libra. Someone just can't make decisions. Like if you asked me if we were going out for dinner, and you said, "What do you feel like tonight?" I'd be like, "You decide. I'm easy going. I don't care. Well, what do you want? Do you want sushi? Sure. Do you want Mexican? Sure. Do you want Chinese food? Sure. Do you want Indian? Sure. Like, I just don't care. Pick something. I'm easy."
I think we'd be terrible on a date because we'd be like, what do you want to eat? I don't know. What do you want to eat?
Oh, my
okay.
God. That happens to me on dates like all the time. And I'm always like,
what movie you want to see? I don't know. What movie do you want to see?
Movies was like a little bit easier to pick because there's only so many, and there's only like so many that you'll actually want to see out of the so many available. But I don't know, with food, it's especially living in Canada where all the food here is so multicultural, it's so hard to pick what you want to eat or where you want to go. There's just too many options.
Yeah, definitely not seafood.
I have to do like fish and chips or crab or something. But yeah, I don't like shrimp or anything too seafoody.
I think fish and chips, I don't really think of as seafood. I think of more like shrimp and lobster and crab and all that other
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, it's not really you know? Seafood, but it's put in that category because it's
right.
in the sea. But yeah, that's about as far as my love for seafood goes. So
well, if I go to a Red Lobster,
suggests, I'll say no.
If I go to a Red Lobster, I don't know if they have those up there in Canada or not, but
yep.
I always get the steak. So it's like...
I don't even go into Red Lobster because my brother used to work there and was not impressed with the preparation. So I avoid Red Lobster at all cost. But
if I went,
I'd probably get like a pasta or a steak too.
Yeah, or a chicken dinner or something. So I always thought they were kind of pricey anyways. I mean, usually you pay more for... You know, good lobster or crab anyways, but then I think if you just get a steak dinner, it's kind of, for what you get, for the money, it's really not worth it. Although, I always did like the biscuits are always good, the bread they have, so.
Yeah, I hate
other
it
than that,
for food.
Yeah, that's a good place for that, it's Red Lobster.
Exactly.
Which I hear down here in the States, they're not doing real well, so that doesn't really surprise me.
Yeah, I heard they just sold or something. They sold... Or someone bought them. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think they're not expanding right now. They're not adding any more restaurants, which interesting to see if like the one in my neighborhood would stay open or if they would close that one down. But I guess they get fairly good business. So I guess people that do like that stuff. So.
I guess I don't know why, but
I don't either. Do you have any pets?
No, I'm couch surfing at my mom's right now, and, you know, even when I lived alone, just with having to pick up and leave at any time, it's not really fair to an animal.
That's true.
I love animals. I really do. And I wish that I was responsible enough to have one, but I know that I'm not, and I don't want to put an animal through that.
That's true. With your schedule, you have to constantly have a pet sitter come over and take care of them. And...
yeah, and I mean, that's just like a huge inconvenience. I can't do that. I can't count on anyone that much.
What would be your ideal pet if you could just have one that, you know, you could have around all the time? What would it be?
Oh, man. See, I was having this discussion on tour as well because, you know, people are like, oh, are you a dog person or a cat person? And it's like, I can't make decisions. Like, I like dogs and I like cats. And eventually I think I said, well, if you held the gun to my head and hooked me up to a lie detector test and asked me what I prefer, I guess I would have to say dogs. But it would have to come down to that. You would have to hold a gun to my head and hook me up to a lie detector test because I like cats that much. I think I like dogs just slightly more than cats. I don't know. They both have their pros and their cons. But it would either be a dog or a cat if I could have one. You know,
so it wouldn't be a snake or anything like that, right?
No, wouldn't but my buddy's house that I just got back from, she has a snake. And that was really interesting to have that sitting on my lap today.
Yeah, how about a big boa constrictor? Those are always fun to have around.
Yeah. Sometimes. So much companionship.
I think I'd always prefer the cat just because they're quiet. I don't know. That's always a good thing.
Yeah, you know, and people have their reasons, like, oh, a cat is less needy or less loud, but I don't know. I like dogs. They're so friendly, and sometimes cats are assholes. You know, dogs rarely is a dog, unless the dog was really messed up, rarely is a dog, like, not trainable where you can be friends with it.
Yeah, I just...
they like you or they don't, and if they've made up their mind that they don't like you, there's no coming back from that.
Well, there definitely are some distinct personalities. The distinct personalities in the feline world, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But like you said, you know, you give them your cat food and you give them the litter box and they're pretty good. Everything's cool. So.
Yeah.
So lastly here, what do you got coming up schedule wise, dates, and then once again, plug your social media.
This weekend I've got the GCW Anime North Convention. So that's like it's basically like a Comic-Con type thing that's going on Friday and Saturday in Toronto. That's going to be really cool. Lots of freaks and geeks there. And then Sunday I'll be in St. Catharines for Crossfire Wrestling. And then I'll have the 31st and the 1st off. I do have to pick up Jennifer Blake from the airport for the shows that got canceled that neither of us are wrestling on. And then I'll be heading out to Newfoundland June 4th through the 12th for a tour. And then after that, I've got a GCW again on June 14th and, Conflict Wrestling, Lipstick and Dynamite. They are crowning their first women's champion on the 14th as well. So I've got double duty that day.
I like that name, Conflict Wrestling.
Yes, that's the name.
It's a good name. Yeah, I like
name.
That. Yeah.
It'll be my first time there for them, so I'm hoping to impress. I think the Canadian Diamond might be making an appearance.
Ooh. Letting the cat out of the bag there a little bit, maybe?
They're already advertising my picture with a mask on, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And as far as social media?
Yes. Again, you follow me on Twitter, at Caitlin Diamond, and of course, my name isn't spelled normally. It's weird, so I'll spell it out. It's KAITLINDIEMOND. So at Caitlin Diamond, and you can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/Caitlin.Diamond.
I know we're friends on Twitter, but do you have like a big following there on Twitter as well?
Not really, no.
Okay.
Apparently I'm just not that cool.
You're doing this podcast now, mate. This will make you cool. You'll have all kinds of followers after this.
I tweeted out that You know, the whole like Woman Crush Wednesday thing. I tweeted out earlier today that Sarah was my Woman Crush Wednesday, so I like tagged her in it, and I got like 4 or 5 followers instantly just from like mentioning her on Twitter. I'm like, I'll have to piggy bank off of her name a little more.
Well, I saw the picture you posted. That would add followers very quickly. So.
Yeah. True. Good thinking.
Yeah, definitely. And if there's any topics, questions you want us to address here on the podcast, either email me betweentheropes@hotmail.com, or I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/Gerwick. I'm also on Facebook. So either of us are pretty easy to find. If there's anything you want us to dive into, any interesting, controversial topics that you want us to discuss in and out of the ring, fair game here on the Diamond Podcast. And I think this is a pretty good debut edition.
I definitely think so.
So if you've heard this podcast and you enjoy it, you know, spread the word. That social media is pretty powerful. Twitter, Facebook, get the word out. And I look forward to the second edition.
Yes, please give us suggestions, because I feel like we just talked about everything in the entire world in the debut edition. So I really don't know what else there is to talk about next time. But come up with some stuff.
I think we barely touched the surface. So I'm sure there'll be a plethora of topics to get into the round number 2.
All right, cool.